From 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR, this is Lake Effect. I'm Joy Powers. Today we'll learn about gay conversion therapy and how banning the practice can help LGBTQ youth. Then a local activist talks about the intersectionality of Black queer people in Milwaukee.
Milwaukee is one of the smallest cities in the world that celebrates Pride, as well as a long-established Juneteenth celebration. The hodgepodge of people are coming together and having roots from different places and different eras and movements.
We'll get some advice on how to keep pets safe in the summer heat and calm during this weekend's fireworks.
When those loud noises happen, animals have a tendency to bolt. And if they take off, you don't know where they're going to end up. So having all their identification up to date is going to give you the best chance of a reunion.
All of that is coming up on Lake Effect. But first, here are today's headlines. This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Joy Powers, and thank you so much for joining us. Although Wisconsin is home to the first openly gay U.S. senator, the state lags behind many others in its protection of LGBTQ people. In fact, the Wisconsin legislature has taken steps to enshrine the practice of gay conversion therapy, a variety of techniques meant to change someone's sexuality, which can lead to psychological damage and suicide. Although there isn't an outright state ban on the practice, that hasn't stopped cities from passing their own bans, including Milwaukee, Cudahy, and Shorewood, among others. La Crosse is the latest city to join that group, in part thanks to the efforts of the Trevor Project, a group that focuses on suicide prevention for LGBTQ youth. Troy Stevenson is the senior advocacy campaign manager at the Trevor Project. And before we get into it, we'd like to caution listeners that there will be frank discussions of abuse and suicide in this conversation. With that said, Troy, thank you so much for being here on Lake Effect.
Thank you for having me.
So conversion therapy is one of these terms that, it's one word or one term, but it really covers a wide array of practices. So when we're talking about conversion therapy, what does it really look like? What is included inside of conversion therapy?
I'm so glad you asked that question. Conversion therapy is a colloquial name that people have begun to use for something called sexual orientation and gender identity change efforts, which is the legal term used. There is no such thing as actual conversion therapy. It is a so-called pseudoscience practice that has been disavowed by every major psychological, sociological organization in the country, association in the country. So the methodology these people use doesn't really match. There's nobody teaches this. It's something that is made up person by person who is doing it. There's groups around the country that try and come up with methods, but quite often it's talk therapy that utilizes shame. There's also other forms of aversion therapy that are much more coercive and abusive. They're all abusive, psychologically abusive, but some are actually physically abusive. So it's hard to define exactly what they're doing because there's no textbook on it because it's not a real medical practice.
It sounds like you would classify conversion therapy as both talk therapy and sometimes, quote unquote, maybe physical therapy, physical practices that coerce people into a certain mindset.
Yes. They're very coercive. Because there is no proven or known or possible, frankly, way to change an immutable fact about a person's self. And that's what's so damaging about this practice. It's causing shame and trauma in these young people that are forced to hide or lie about what is happening to them in order to avoid family rejection or social rejection or religious-based rejection. They're convinced or told that there's something wrong with them, and then they have to recloset themselves. And so often we see people that have been through this and get into adulthood, and that's when they start talking about what happened to them. And I don't know if you could imagine having somebody try and change your sexual orientation. I don't know what that is, but it's traumatic.
I had a chance to speak with an old friend of mine not so long ago about his own experience with conversion therapy. And he has had a lot of issues in his adult life, in part as a result of this therapy, but perhaps more because of what this therapy did to his relationship with his family. He described it as kind of, you know, a cycle of lying and then shame and then guilt and telling the truth, and then it would continue over, and it was this constant kind of shame, as you say. What are the kinds of outcomes that we see from people who go through this type of therapy as they get out of it, as they enter often adulthood?
We see high rates of post-traumatic stress disorder. We see high rates of suicidality. The increase is exponential in actually attempts and completed suicides in folks that have survived conversion therapy. We quite often talk about the survivors of conversion therapy, those that made it through to the other side and found safety and found affirming care. But quite often people forget about the victims of conversion therapy, those that didn't make it through, those that just couldn't handle the psychological or sometimes physical trauma. I myself am not a survivor of conversion therapy per se, but when I was 15, I had just come out of the closet to myself and was beginning to socially when I met my first boyfriend. And we were at school, behind the school, holding hands like teenagers do. We're seen by the football team and chased away from the school. And when I got home, I called him and he was inconsolable and just kept telling me that he couldn't go back. He couldn't go back. And I couldn't initially figure out what he was talking about. I thought he meant school. But then he confided in me and told me about a camp his parents had sent him to before. And he was terrified, mortified, actually, that something would happen. He would be outed again and his parents would send him back. And he put the phone down on me because it was in the late 90s when we didn't have so many cell phones. But that night he completed suicide. So I never had the chance to have that conversation, that consoling conversation. So that's the real world outcome many times in what happens with young people subjected to this type of abusive quote unquote practice.
I'm so sorry that you had to go through that and experience that alongside someone you were so close to.
Thank you.
Now, as we're looking at the recent ban that was passed in La Crosse, there was some pushback. What was it like getting this ban through La Crosse?
There's pushback in many communities. There are people that, especially people that are doing this kind of thing, often they're profiting on it. It is quite a profitable business. And I often compare it to snake oil. So people are selling a bill of goods to sometimes well-meaning parents that think they're doing the best thing for their child. And it's fraudulent. It's not something that's possible. Other times it's folks steeped in religious or social bias. And they're the ones that come forward. Many times these folks are hard to identify, but they, for lack of a better term, out themselves in these committee hearings. It's shocking to admit that somebody's doing this to another human, but they will talk about it. So we still, as much progress as there's been in LGBTQ rights over the last couple of decades, this is still something that people believe they can change something fundamental about people, and they will fight hard, which is ironic because it actually does nothing to help them. They're just hurting these young people. So the pushback is strange. In La Crosse specifically, I do believe if folks looked at it, there was more support on the council than people thought. There were a couple of council members that had affirmed their support that couldn't be there that night. So it looked a lot closer than it actually was.
Hmm. Now, one of the questions I think always with this kind of ban is, you know, it's great to say that this thing is banned, but it's harder to make sure that it doesn't happen. How will this ban be enforced?
That's a good question. Every one of these can be enforced in a different way. I believe La Crosse goes through the Human Rights Commission, just like any discrimination claim would be enforced. We are actively working with regulatory bodies across the country to try and make sure that there's a safe and efficient way for people to report these instances. Quite often, young people don't have the agency to make these kind of reports themselves. Young people don't have the knowledge or the ability to do so. So it is our hope that in the coming years, in the near future, we'll be able to help facilitate people that have been through this and they really start to say this in a, you know, to come out about it in adulthood after they are free to do so. But that doesn't mean that just because they are an adult now, that they can't report something that happened to them in recent years as a youth. And these all cover what happened when they were minors or what happens when they're minors.
As you say, kids are not always the best advocates for themselves. They're not able to advocate for themselves often in the way that adults are. How do you empower a community and the people who are around these kids, these teens often, how do you empower them to be that support, be the support that kids or teens need to get out of what can be an abusive process?
I mean, what you said is correct, but I just want to make it clear that often folks are doing this to young people at a much younger age. I've known people in, or known of cases where young people are 8, 10, younger even, where this is done to them, especially trans youth, which can be even more traumatic at that fundamental age in a person's upbringing. What we can do is what ordinances like this do even more so than the later reports, is that it elevates this conversation in the public discourse. It brings it to a knowledge that this is still happening. It's still happening. And many people thought that this was something that ended in the 1970s when psychologists quit, you know, counting sexual orientation or being gay, lesbian, bisexual is something that was deviant. They, you know, went out of the DSM. It was no longer something that could be treated because it was no longer considered something that needed to be treated. And this same thing has happened recently with in the last 20 years with folks who are transgender. But that is a misconception. This still happens every day. This is more widespread than people think it is. And in many ways, we think it might be increasing. So it's getting that message out that this is a real and abusive practice that is hurting young people in real time right now in 2022.
If you are pretty certain that a child is going through conversion therapy, how can you, as a non-parent, as somebody on the outside of the core family, advocate for that child through this kind of ban?
On top of this kind of ban, we have research. The Trevor Project has shown through extensive research. We have a project last year, and we do this annually. It's our national survey of young people that has over 36,000, I believe, participants. And what we've seen is 40% of LGBTQ say that just one affirming adult in their life makes them 40% less likely to face suicidality and suicide attempts. So just being there, talking to them, affirming who they are, making sure that they have that sounding board, that person that believes them and supports them and affirms them, is the most important thing one can do. And if someone does have the capacity, telling a young person how to advocate for themselves or giving them the resources needed to make those kinds of reports is something that they can do. Now, we always want to caution people on doing more harm. You know, you wouldn't want a young person to be in a situation where greater abuse could happen or family rejection. But the most important thing they could do is to be there for that young person and to affirm them.
All right. Well, Troy, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect and sharing your work.
Well, thank you so much for having us.
Troy Stevenson is the Senior Advocacy Campaign Manager at the Trevor Project, which helped the City of La Crosse pass a ban on conversion therapy. Last year, I spoke with a Wisconsin survivor of conversion therapy at WUWM.com. You can learn more about his experience and how it changed his life. Pride Month is coming to a close, but the fight for LGBTQ equality and safety won't end on June 30th. It's a year-round effort that many organizations and people have dedicated their time and lives to. One of those people is Elle Hill. She's a Black woman of trans experience and a dedicated LGBTQ health equity advocate in Milwaukee. She's currently working as the Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin Inclusion Health Program Specialist. She joined WUWM's Community Engagement Coordinator, Rafael Munoz Echevarria, on Instagram Live earlier this week.
We're doing this interview live on the anniversary of the start of Stonewall. So I'd just like to ask you, I think Stonewall means a lot of different things to different people. What does Stonewall mean to you?
Stonewall means to me a movement, a commemoration of a movement. We often talk about Marsha P. Johnson and Sylvia Rivera in terms of Stonewall and in terms of being the Mothers of the Pride movement. And of course they are. And I personally look up to Marsha P. Johnson a lot. And I feel that I call on her strength and try to emote that strength in her self-liberty with expression and with the out and proud part of Pride that we talk about. I feel connected to her in specifically, but Stonewall was not the first LGBTQ riot or uprising that led to what is now known as the Pride movement. There were the Compton cafeteria riots. Even here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin last year, we commemorated with the LGBTQ History Project in the mayor's office. We commemorated the Black Night Brawl, which was an uprising that happened here. Those things are part of our history. I think it's important for us to know about these things and about different things that we should be commemorating that are just as worthy of commemoration as some of the other days that we celebrate and uplift as Americans, but particularly for us as Black and Brown, queer and trans people to know where we come from and to know what type of organizing and uprisings and historical things have happened to both get us where we are and how we can also model and learn from the things that they did to be more effective in the now.
You mentioned Sylvia Rivera and Marsha P. Johnson, and I think I see a lot of resemblance in Sheba and Star, which was created by Marsha and Sylvia. Do you see this overarching influence of them through your work? Or you also mentioned the Black Knight. Josie Carter spoke about that through the LGBT project that you mentioned. Can you talk a little bit about maybe their influence on your work or on your life?
I don't know if Marsha P. is a big influence for Sheba. Sheba was founded by the House of Infinity about 15 years ago, a little bit over that now. I don't know if Marsha or Star was a influence or not, but nothing is original, okay? Nothing is original. Everyone has already done every type of protest. Everyone has already done every type of support group and action. What makes them original is the people and is the connection with the people. Sheba is more than just a support program. It has grown into what became the Black Rose Initiative. We have walked in fashion shows. We marched in D.C. We stood up in multiple protests and were speakers in multiple protests over the course of the pandemic and just different things just over the 15 years that Sheba has been around. And so I think in the sense of probably following whatever modeling to even get a group of trans women together, sure that it maybe there's a connection. But like I said, I feel personally connected to Marsha. I know that the work that I get to do in terms of building my career is because of contributions of people like Marsha. Milwaukee is one of the smallest cities in the world that celebrates Pride, and that has had a long time Pride celebration as well as a long established Juneteenth celebration. And I think that that's one, like the hodgepodge we are of people in the Midwest all coming together and having roots and from different places and different eras and movements. And also just about who we are as a city and people and our sense of pride and our sense of celebration and uplifting that. Definitely in the last year, I've been impacted by Josie Carter, but she wasn't someone I knew about before they asked me to be a part of the commemoration. And I should have, you know what I mean? Just for myself as a Black trans woman, her being a local historical figure. We also talk about Miss Major as a Stonewall figure. And she's also an original Midwesterner. She's native to Chicago, to Illinois. And so, you know, we should know these things, and we should know these people's names, and we can should continue to say their names.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting, and I think kind of ties into my next question. In last year, in 2021, the Human Rights Campaign tracked a record number of violent fatal incidents against trans and gender nonconforming folks, and with at 50 fatalities tracked. And in this year, in 2022, they've already tracked at least 17 trans people fatally shot or killed by other violent means. And they say at least because we know that too often these stories go unreported or misreported. And I think it's important to note that in previous years, the majority of these people were Black and Latinx trans folks. So can you talk a little bit about Brazil Johnson, who was just added to this list recently here in Milwaukee?
First, I've been actually a part of the city's celebration of the HRC Pride Index, Equality Index, for the last several years. And I participated in those events because they were visibility platforms for myself as an advocate, but also for the community, and to talk about the actual work that's being done in the Black and Brown LGBTQ community. But we should have never been celebrating it. And they shouldn't celebrate it this year. And they shouldn't celebrate it regardless of whatever rating they poll and get numbers back when those polls, like we often talk about when we talk about polling, don't include Black and Brown trans people, don't include us actually telling them whether or not it's safe here, whether or not we're safe here. It had been almost 10 years since Chanel was killed, a young woman here. One, I think that we were blessed as a community to not have an identified trans woman, Black trans woman, be killed. In that time period, there was a white transgender woman who was killed last year who was on the HRC list from last year in Wisconsin, but not from Milwaukee. And we have lost other ladies who were native to Milwaukee but just did not live here that were killed as well. I think that we were blessed to have seen a season and a time without that. We're still in danger, though. And we've still been in danger, even without it ending in a tragedy. One thing as a society we need to do is stop patting people on the back for doing the right thing. The city acknowledging work being done within the city acknowledging what is happening on the ground for Black and Brown trans people and queer people. It's not something they need a celebration for. It's not something that they need the Human Rights Campaign and a press conference for. It's something that they should be uplifting all the time. And I just think it's ignorant a bit to try to grade somewhere as safe when we know that we live in a highly segregated state, a state with the most incarceration, a state with human trafficking being very high, a state that's very conservative, where obviously our laws and legislation aren't accommodating to queer and trans people. So I don't know where they ever got that we would end up with a high safety index rating. But obviously now, following the third year of them doing that consecutively, you have a murder. So obviously those things don't line up with each other, that we would be safe here versus other places, or just safe here, period. I think that also even here, there's no telling if there were more Black trans women that were killed here over the last several years or not, and across the country. And I think that when we're looking at those statistics, we have to be mindful that while we're seeing an increase, for me personally, when I look at the list every year, the increase that I see is that the ages of the people are getting younger and younger. That's the trend that I see. I don't see the number increasing as a trend, because is it just now increasing, or are we just now having more data and having more people represented in terms of their identities to be reported on? We hear about trans women being killed all throughout the year and all across the country. And I don't know if any of those lists are fully accurate. And I don't know if they should consider themselves to be fully accurate. As far as Brazil, I think that is very unfortunate. They're still looking for information. I hope that they get that information. I hope that they are supported in seeking justice. I hope that people in power and in position and those with information find it in their hearts to have seeking justice for us be something that's important and not something that is forgotten about or is something that's pushed to the side. I think that Brazil was a beautiful young lady. I think that Brazil did have people and family that loved her. And that's very important. And also I think that she was more than a victim and more than a young lady who lost her life. And we should try to bring more awareness to who she was than just about what happened to her.
Elle Hill is a Black woman of trans experience currently working as the Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin Inclusion Health Program Specialist. She spoke to WUWM's Community Engagement Coordinator, Rafael Munoz Echevarria, on Instagram Live. You can find their full conversation at WUWM.com. With the great weather and great festivals happening in the city right now, many Milwaukeeans have been enjoying some equally great music from local musicians. Later in the show, we'll learn about some of the best songs released this month in the Milwaukee Music Roundup. But first, we'll bring you some advice on how to keep pets calm during the fireworks this weekend. That's coming up on Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. You're listening to Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. Summer days in Milwaukee can get hot and uncomfortable. And not just for people, for our pets too. This 4th of July weekend, we can also expect to hear a lot of fireworks, which can stress some cats and dogs. But there are some key ways we can help our pets through these troubling times. Stacy Oatman is the media coordinator for the Wisconsin Humane Society, and she joins me to give us her tips on how to care for pets in these summer months.
When we're thinking about summer pet care and the kinds of things that come up in the summer for our pets in general, what are the biggest concerns?
Certainly some of the biggest concerns for our pets in the summer are going to be overheating. And you want to make sure that you're doing as much preventative work as you can to make sure that your pet doesn't overheat. So some of those things would include walking and exercising your animals in the early morning or in the evening when there's less direct sunlight. It's a little bit cooler outside. And definitely feeling the pavement with the palm of your hand. If that pavement's too hot for your hand, it's definitely too hot for their paw pads. And when you do take them outside, just make sure that you're taking breaks in the shade and that you have plenty of fresh, clean water available for them.
What do you do if the pavement is too hot for their paws? I mean, some of us are going to have backyards and other places that we can take our animals, but some of us don't.
Certainly, if it's too hot for your hand and their paws, it would be a great idea just to wait until later that evening when the sun goes down a little bit and it's a little cooler outside. If you can find a spot to take them, like a park where there's some grass that they may be able to go on, that would be better than trying to get them to walk on that hot pavement.
Now, one of the things that I'm always concerned about as somebody who owns cats is making sure that they're okay. Now, my cats are indoor cats. How do we ensure that they're being cared for and that they are not getting overheated?
For cats, you just want to make sure that they're inside, out of that direct sunlight indoors, and that there's some air conditioning available for them, if possible. If not, a fan would be great for a cat. And just making sure, again, that they have fresh, clean water available, whether they're inside or outside. That's so important for pets to be able to have access to that.
I think a lot of people have difficulty getting their cats to drink water a lot of the time. You know, there's a variety of reasons why I've heard that cats don't always drink water so well, but it does become a problem. How do you encourage that behavior?
Just send that water to them, make sure that they know where it's at. Make sure that they have access to several different water dishes in the area. If that's possible, you would want to make sure that there's many different options for them so that they can have what they want when they want it.
So in my neighborhood, it seems regardless of the season, as long as it's nice out, people start lighting off fireworks. Some of my animals are okay with that. Some of them really don't like that. How do you handle that when you have fireworks that are going off at really irregular times? What should you do?
A lot of animals are very scared by fireworks or loud noises, including thunder, things of that nature. The number one most important thing that you can do is to make sure that your pets' collar ID tags and microchips are up to date with your current information. When those loud noises happen, animals have a tendency to bolt. And if they take off, you don't know where they're going to end up. So having all their identification up to date is going to give you the best chance of a reunion with your animal if you ever become separated. It's best to just leave them inside if possible in a secure space, whether that's a kennel, a crate, a closed room. You can always put a fan on, turn the TV up a little louder, put some music on, something that might distract from those loud booms and crashes. And you can also look into items like a thunder shirt. There's homeopathic remedies that you can use as well for your pets that are specially formulated for those loud noises that might scare them.
So along with fireworks and picnics and the very many things that Wisconsinites love to do during the summer, a lot of us are going to go swimming. And in Wisconsin, that often means going in the lake or even sometimes a river. What are some things to keep in mind, especially if you have an animal who you haven't taken swimming before?
Well, just like us, dogs do enjoy cooling off in the water. So either a pool or a lake, wherever you're at. But not all of those animals are going to swim well. And even those that do, they might not know how to get out of the pool or the lake that they're in. And if you're in a bigger body of water, strong currents and riptides can also be a danger to those animals. So if you decide to take an animal out to the water, either boating or sailing or just swimming off the shore, you want to make sure that they are wearing a life vest. If it's in a bright color, that way you're able to keep an eye on them and that they can stay afloat during any sort of accident that might occur. And always, always just keep an eye on them when they're near the water. You never know what they can get into, and life jackets aren't foolproof. So you want to just make sure that you're really keeping a close watch on your pet when you are in the lake or the pool this summer.
Well, Stacy, thank you so much for sharing these tips with us as we all enjoy our summer months. And thank you so much for being here on Lake Effect.
Thank you.
Stacy Oatman is the media coordinator for the Wisconsin Humane Society. We spoke last summer. And in case you didn't know, you can listen to Lake Effect as a podcast. If you'd like to take us on the go or hear any of the segments on the show, search for Lake Effect in Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts to listen on demand. You can also follow WUWM on Instagram, where you'll find videos and pictures from news stories and Lake Effect interviews. Coming up, we'll hear some of the best new music from local musicians in our monthly series, the Milwaukee Music Roundup. That's next on Lake Effect. On 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.
This is Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. With Summerfest and the multitude of other festivals happening in the city, many Milwaukeeans have been enjoying great music from local musicians. Matt Wild is one of those Milwaukeeans. He's the co-founder of Milwaukee Record. Every month, he joins me to talk about some of the best new music from local musicians. For the Milwaukee Music Roundup, Matt Wild, thank you, as always, for being here on Lake Effect.
Thank you for having me once again.
So this first song is very easy to listen to, if that makes sense, which is maybe what you expect from a group called Le Resorts.
Le Resorts, that's right. I feel that we've talked about them before in the past, and probably around summertime, because at this point it's almost a Milwaukee tradition. It's summer, it's warm out, it's lovely out, and here's a new Le Resorts album. This latest record is called Explorers, and I think it's one of their best yet. Now, Le Resorts is basically Vinnie Kircher and Martha Cannon. Vinnie is previously from a very popular Milwaukee band called Jail. Martha is from her own group that still plays around called Lady Cannon. And these two have been singing together and making music together now for, 4 or 5 years or so. It's very tropical pop. It's very, very summery. There's a lot of marimba involved. It just makes you feel like you're on a beach and you're soaking up the sun. So it's very appropriate that they typically release a lot of their records in the summertime. For this latest record, which, like I said, is called Explorers, I think a little of that kind of more, the kind of kitschy tropical pop that they've done in the past has been toned down a little bit. What I really like about them is just the kind of, lyrical themes that they're talking about. And in the song that we're going to be listening to, which is also called Explorers, it's a really fascinating song, really deals with relationships and fidelity and trust and things like that. And throughout this album, there's just a great kind of back and forth, kind of boy-girl call-and-response type songwriting going on between Vinnie and Martha. I think they refer to themselves as kind of the Sonny and Cher of Milwaukee music. A little tongue-in-cheek there, but it's a fine comparison. I love Le Resorts. They just consistently put out terrific music. I really, really love this album. I really, really love this song. This is Le Resorts with Explorers.
Explorers by Le Resort. Now, the next song we're looking at, it feels like a blast from the past, even though intellectually I know it is a new song. It has a very 50s or 60s kind of feel.
Absolutely, yeah. It's another kind of vaguely beach blanket bingo-y kind of song. This is a new track by a Milwaukee group called The Grovelers, and the name of the song is Groveling Flamingo. Now, the Grovelers have been around for a number of years. They're, kind of this kind of sleazy, grimy, but fun kind of rockabilly, garage, punk rock band. Their stuff is always a ton of fun. They have a new record It is called Misplaced Cars and Blackouts. And, you know, you kind of get what vibe they're going for just from that name alone. And the album art, which is an old picture of like an old dad in the 70s passed out on a like 70s couch, just really perfectly sums up the vibe of what the Grovelers are going for. The new record, it's a lot of fun. Maybe one of their best ones as well. I think it's really terrifically produced. You know, it's not, you know, recorded in a basement, lo-fi stuff. It's, you know, really well-produced and well-recorded. Sounds terrific. A lot of hooky, very fun songs. And the one, like I said, we're going to be listening to is kind of a largely instrumental one, but it's a lot of fun, and it really sums up the vibe of this record as well. It's The Grovelers with Groveling Flamingo.
Groveling Flamingo by The Grovelers. Now, the next song that we're going to look at, it's from two well-known acts here in Milwaukee who, at least to me, don't seem like a natural pair. When you think about their work, it just, to me, doesn't naturally fit together. But this song is a really interesting showcase of their talents.
Absolutely. We're talking about Peter Mulvey and Sista Strings. Peter Mulvey has been around for, decades at this point in Milwaukee, kind of folk Americana, very politically minded singer-songwriter. Sista Strings, a sister duo of Monique and Shanti Ross, who play violin and cello, they have been kind of a Milwaukee staple for many years as well. Now, I should say that Peter, I believe, is living in Massachusetts these days, and Sista Strings have relocated to Nashville in recent years. So they're both kind of off doing their own thing, but you're right. On paper, it seems like a very kind of unlikely pairing, but, you know, when you listen to it, it's fantastic. Now, they got together back in 2020, I think right before the pandemic, and they recorded a live album in Fort Atkinson called Live at the Cafe Carp, recorded in Fort Atkinson. They released that record, and now they are getting ready to release a studio album. The new record is called Love is the Only Thing. It's going to be released in August on Ani DiFranco's record label, Righteous Babe Records. And it's great to see both of these artists enjoying a lot of success elsewhere. Sista Strings have been backing up Alison Russell and were recently on, I think, Jimmy Kimmel. They were, featured prominently on the Jimmy Kimmel Show. And I believe they're opening for Brandi Carlile at the Pfizer Forum this summer. So great to see them getting a lot of success, and Peter as well. So this is Peter Mulvey and Sista Strings with You and Everybody Else.
And Everybody Else by Peter Mulvey and Sista Strings. Now, our last song comes from a group that I know we've spoken about before, because who could forget this name, Velocihamster.
Velocihamster, absolutely. Once you hear it, you'll never unhear it. Of course, You're taking Velociraptors and putting them together with hamsters. And what do you get? You get the world's first lap steel metal band. This is the, at this point, kind of long-running project of Milwaukee musician Sean Williamson, and he plays lap steel, and for a number of years, he's been releasing these records under the Velocihamster moniker, and he's doing instrumental, some originals, and a lot of covers, too, of old songs, and he's just doing them with this kind of distorted lap steel, and the results, I think, are a lot of fun. And he has a new record out. It is called Uncaged. This is, I think, almost 100% covers. There's a cover of Ace of Spades by Motorhead. There's a Led Zeppelin song. There's a Beastie Boys song. There's even a Sarah McLachlan song that he's covering on here with his distorted lap steel. The song we're going to be listening to is my favorite out of the bunch. It is called Six Underground, which folks may remember as an old one-hit wonder from a 90s group called Sneaker Pimps. And maybe the name doesn't ring a bell, or maybe the band doesn't ring a bell, but I think once you hear this song, even played on a distorted lap steel, you'll be like, oh yeah, I remember that song. So this is a lot of fun. Another one from Velocihamster. It's a Velocihamster covering Six Underground.
Six Underground by Velocihamster. That is a Sneaker Pimps cover. Matt Wild, I know you've been enjoying some things at Summerfest so far this summer. What else are you looking forward to in this upcoming month?
Yeah, like you said, Summerfest has been absolutely terrific. And, you know, the rest of the month is just, I mean, we're deep in it right now. This is Milwaukee summer at its finest. There are still a ton of block parties. So many, like, you know, weekly music series that are, like, outdoors and on patios. It's a little overwhelming sometimes between things like, you know, Chill on the Hill on Tuesday, and then Wonderful Wednesdays at Lake Park, and then there's another thing on Thursday. There is not a day of the week when there is not, like, a free music series outside in a park, outside on a patio. And I don't know, it's just fantastic. The weather so far has been just absolutely lovely. So I'm just looking forward to kind of continuing doing what I've been doing here. And there's just, if you want to see local music and see it for free and in a beautiful setting, you just have no excuse not to. It's just everywhere this summer. It's fantastic. It's great to be back.
A lot of opportunities this summer while the weather is nice. Matt, thank you as always for joining us here on Lake Effect.
Thanks so much for having me.
Matt Wild is the co-founder of Milwaukee Record. Every month, he publishes his Milwaukee Music Roundup, and you can find our previous conversations at WUWM.com. And that wraps up today's show. I'm Joy Powers. Audrey Nowakowski and Mallory Chang join me in producing Lake Effect each week with help from Chase Browning, Kobe Brown, and Kate Flynn. Becky Mortensen is our executive producer. This week, we also heard from Mayon Silver, Taryn Powell, Susan Bentz, and Rafael Munoz-Echevarria from the WUWM News Team. Jason Reavy is our studio engineer. Michelle Maternowski is our digital manager. Valeria Navarro-Viegas is our digital editor. Trevor Shep wrote our theme music. You won't be hearing Lake Effect on Monday because of the 4th of July holiday, but you will hear an hour-long special about the first American flag. We were all taught in school that it was sewn by Betsy Ross, right? Well, when historians go searching, there's really no proof of that to be found. Monday, you'll hear an episode of the Smithsonian Side Door Podcast, looking into the tall tale of the first American flag. Lake Effect will be back on Tuesday with new conversations and stories all about Milwaukee. If you missed any of Lake Effect this week, you can find all of our conversations at WUWM.com. If you'd like to take the show on the go, you can download the Lake Effect podcast from Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. And thank you so much for joining us on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.